There is this thing.
Do you realize
what is? There is this thing.
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing.
On.
There is this thing going on.
What
do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? Brought to you live.
Welcome to Off the Hour here on CKUT 90.3 FM, produced by CKUT's Community News Collective. We are 26 days into the month of May. Today we feature the last day of our special programming, Broadcasting Against Borders, a coast-to-coast audio mobilization around migrant justice in the lead-up to the May 27th National Day of Action called Status for All. For the next hour, we will be joined by a live panel of migrant justice organizers from groups across the continent. We'll be looking at migration from the perspective of those directly affected and talking about strategies for resistance. You are listening to Off the Hour, breaking all corporate and state-created sound barriers on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. To reach Montreal's Community News Collective or to get involved, call 398-6788. That's 514-398-6788. We'll be right back.
What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal here on CKUT. Peace.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
This song goes out, I guess, more now than ever to the Arab American community. But I wrote it more with Latin Americans in mind. Of course, so many folks are in the same boat. Hopefully not soon facing indefinite detention for being immigrants. The clouds gather in your forests, drift to my desert town. I think of far off places as the rain is coming down. You're bent down in the fields, picking fruit there from the vine. And it ends up on my table as it moves on down the line. The moon shines brightly in the night sky. The river flows from south to north. With the changing of the seasons, the birds migrate back and forth. They say that you can't come here, not in the light of day. Somebody has got plans for you. Starve at home or hide away. Will we open up the borders? Tear down the prison walls. Declare that no one is illegal. Watch the giant as it falls. So much travels across these borders. So much is bought and sold. One way goes the gunships, the other comes the gold. Free trade is like a needle, drawing blood straight from your heart. The border's like a prison, keeping friends apart. Will we open up the borders? Tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal. Watch the giant as it falls.
Welcome back to CKUT's Off the Hour special presentation of the lead-in to tomorrow's march, Solidarity Across Borders, which will take place at Phillips Square at 12 noon and will continue all day throughout Montreal and end up in Kent Park tomorrow evening with a barbecue and picnic for the kids. On the phone right now, we have Aziz Fall, who is the coordinator of the Impunity Campaign on behalf of Justice for Sankara, which is currently before the UN Human Rights Committee. Aziz, are you there?
Yes, thank you.
Aziz, I'm very pleased to have you on this panel discussion this evening.
I'm delighted.
Aziz, in 1955, there was a conference in Bodang, Indonesia, where 29 countries that were just coming out of the colonization era presented 10 principles for the future of the world's democracy and justice and human rights for all citizens. And you had been telling me that there were two or three of these principles which are very much relevant today, especially in what Solidarity Across Borders is trying to establish. Would you care discussing two or three of these principles that were set forth way back in 1955?
Sure. I must tell that actually the 10 principles are still very relevant to the world in which we are living in. The only difference is that at that time, people were fighting during the decolonization process, and we were at the end of the Second World War. Within 10 years, the world was split in two, was a bipolarized world, the East, and the West. And that was the context of those 10 principles that were like keystone for the non-aligned movement. To tell you the truth, I must have little problem picking in the 10 principles which are the most relevant. I think the first one, which deals with the issue of respect of human rights and UN principles, is still very important, because despite of the fact that the UN principles were not drafted by most of the international community, they are still the backbone of the international relations system, and they need to be respected. The second issue is the respect of national integrity and sovereignty. The third was the recognition of race equality and the equality of countries despite of their scale, etc. And the rest were issue dealing with non-aggression, use of force, non-intervention in internal, domestic, and sovereign affairs, and so on and so on. Most of these things are actually in total jeopardy, despite of the fact that the two blocs disappeared. We now have a unipolar type of world, and the issue of being aligned on the globalization process is at stake. So, in fact, we can reverse that. That's why I wrote that paper for the 50 years of the Bandung Conference, calling for some type of reviving of that spirit in light of the globalization effects that actually affects every sphere of the nation's life, on everybody's life, not least the economy, and principally by the role of the multinationals that fuels neocolonialism, most of the so-called decolonized areas.
And Aziz, it is interesting that the Solidarity Across Borders have stated as one of their objectives that status for all is to achieve basic justice and dignity for people living in fear and anxiety of deportation and detention. And what is interesting is to look back at what was established by these 29 countries over 50 years ago, and to understand how we are still fighting for these same basic principles today.
Yeah, and indeed, that's why they're still relevant, and not to mention that most of the people seeking asylum in the north are coming from those same countries where, in fact, development is no longer possible. The only thing that is possible is to comply, to adjust to the globalization process, which is really hard for most of the population. So we have starvation appearing again in some areas where it disappeared due to structural adjustment policy of the IMF, the World Bank, and so on. We have poverty that have declined in South and East Asia, but is rooming in Africa. So we have to have, I think, to focus on global issues that have damaging effects. And one of the effects that you can look at today is this massive immigration. You may have noticed that last week, Sarkozy, the interior minister of France, did this tour in Africa where he was promoting the idea of some type of selective immigration. And if you look carefully at that type of selective immigration that he was trying to advocate, it's mainly some type of promotion of brain drain, you see, forgetting the historical links that actually unite the African immigration and France. Now we have a third generation of African who settled in Europe, but their ancestors, their fathers, came there, in fact, for the First World War, fought for the European liberty, the Second World War, and the decolonization period. So we have all these generations that actually are very anxious on this new policy.
And today, as these same generations are facing the struggle to deal with these issues across Canada and the United States.
Yeah, I think the problem is all over the same. I think here we have some disguised rules. We have the idea of setting status for people, and we have to remember that the dominion system is the one that have created first with the native people, those so-called native with status, native without status, etc., and kept them in reserve, and those have been granted papers, etc. The same system was used actually to build apartheid in South Africa. So if you look carefully, and even if you, it's a little maybe over-exaggerated, but if you look carefully, what we have now is apartheid in a world global scale where people without status, people who are not, in fact, in the information type of society, who have not the skills, who have not money, you know, to be able to have this way of consumption, well, these people are totally marginalized, you know. So that's why it makes the whole issue very, very dramatic. And at the same time, the birth rate in northern country is declining, and the need for labor. So it is a kind of very surrealistic situation where brain drain seems to be the only solution for the north. That's why you have this renewal of security, renewal of immigration laws that are being tightened and are going to be more and more severe.
Aziz Fall, I thank you very much for leading us into our panel discussion today.
It was my pleasure.
Solidarity Across Borders.
Thank you.
Like to hear more from Aziz Fall, you can reach his website, www.expresszoom.com/Aziz Fall. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Terry. Bye.
CKUT, CKLN, and Co-op Radio present Broadcasting Against Borders, a national radio broadcast for May 22nd to 26th, in the lead-up to the Cross Canada Day of Action Status for All on May 27th. Tune in to hear reports, discussions, and interviews on the state of migration in Canada. Powerful stories from the front lines of struggle as immigrants and refugees fight for dignity and the right to stay. On CKUT, tune in to Off the Hour, 5 to 6 p.m. from May 22nd to 26th. Each day, we will bring you coverage from this broadcast. And don't forget the Status for All Day of Action, coast to coast, on May 27th. For more information, call 514-398-6788. Email news@ckut.ca or visit www.solidarityacrossborders.org. No one is illegal.
Yeah. 5:18 in the afternoon. You're tuned in to Off the Hour, CKUT 90.3 FM. And again, this is the last day of our special programming, Broadcast Against Borders. It's been a week-long broadcast brought to you by CKUT in Montreal, CKLN Radio in Toronto, and Co-op Radio in Vancouver. So a coast-to-coast broadcast focusing on immigration issues in the lead-up to a nationwide day of action, Status for All, which is going to be happening tomorrow, Saturday, May the 27th, with demonstrations happening again in Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Ottawa, Fredericton, and other cities. In Montreal, the march will be starting at noon at Phillips Square. So to carry on with our panel discussion, we're now joined by three new guests. In studio with us, we have Poya Safari, who is an organizer here in Montreal with Solidarity Across Borders. And joining us on the phone from Toronto, we have Mohan, who works with Known as Illegal in Toronto, one of the organizing groups for the demonstration there. And also joining us on the phone from Vancouver, we have Harjap, who is an organizer with Known as Illegal in Vancouver. So a big welcome to all our guests. And maybe just to begin, we'll go through each city and we'll take a look at the mobilizations that are happening on each city. And then we'll kind of go into a bit of a discussion about migration and how it kind of plays out across the country. So maybe to start with Poya, can you tell us a little bit, just give us a briefing on what Solidarity Across Borders is and this demonstration that's being planned for tomorrow?
Solidarity Across Borders is a network of immigrant refugee groups, directly affected groups, as well as allies who have come together over the past 3 years to fight for rights and dignity for immigrants and refugees. And essentially, last year we marched to Ottawa over 8 days. And this year we've decided to, as a part of a National Day of Action, to march here in Montreal, demanding status for all refugees and immigrants living here. And our network will continue past this march to continue to work, mobilize for status.
Mm-hmm. Moving a little bit east, we have Mohan on the phone from Toronto. Mohan, are you there?
Yep, I am.
Can you give us an idea of what's going to be happening in Toronto tomorrow for this day of action?
Well, tomorrow we're going to start the march at 1 p.m. just outside of Boise in downtown Toronto, and we're going to march through mainly the communities that have mostly affected by the recent wave of deportations and public targeting of refugees and immigrants and non-status people in Toronto, and end with a community fair and concert in the park in the center of one of these communities to celebrate the courage and the resistance that non-status people have to have shown, and that they have to show every day just going throughout their daily lives.
And finally, moving even further to the west, we have Harjap from Vancouver. Harjap, are you there?
Yes.
And what is happening in Vancouver tomorrow for this nationwide Day of Action, Status for All?
Well, we're going to be having basically a march downtown in Vancouver, starting from the Art Gallery at about 2 o'clock. And we've actually been working through a coalition of organizations through a coalition which is called the Status Coalition. And it's been quite a bit of community groups based in the Middle Eastern, Latino, South Asian, African, Iranian, Chinese, and a whole bunch of other communities that have been actually coordinating some of this work. So the outreach has been really great, and we've got some buses and stuff organized from the suburbs to come from some of the areas where a lot of migrant communities are based. And I guess we're crossing our fingers and looking forward to the day.
Poya, I wanted to ask you, on the Status for All in Solidarity Across Borders website, one of the statements made was that hundreds and thousands of people live without status, and hundreds of thousands of people are being exploited by Immigration Canada policies that are seemingly arbitrary and racist. Might I ask you for some specific examples from Montreal, and then our representatives from Toronto and Vancouver can follow up with some of their examples from their specific cities as well?
Well, basically, I mean, before giving examples, I would just say that, like, the system in general works in that way where it's completely arbitrary. You have judges or IRB members who have no they're appointed with, like, no knowledge of immigration refugee issues. They're politically appointed. So just to show you where that all starts off, there's no appeal at all, so you can't even appeal a decision. So you're at the mercy of one person. But just to give you some specific examples, here in Montreal, for example, there's a the case of two Palestinian brothers from the same refugee camp in Palestine. One is accepted, one is refused. Identical cases. Where's the logic? It's just simply they had different judges. One was sick on the day that he was supposed to show up, and that's it. So, I mean, that just displays the arbitrary process that people go through. Most people refer to it as a lottery. It's a lottery. You go in and you can win, you can lose, but there's not much that defines how that's going to happen. Can I give you another example? Is there another example would be a woman from Bangladesh here in Montreal who she was refused on what's called the pre-removal risk assessment, the last step before you're actually removed. And basically what was stated in her assessment was that because she had a high school degree from Bangladesh and came from Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, that she would certainly find work in Bangladesh. I mean, it's just the ignorance and the sheer racism is blatant, and people confront it every day. And people continue to resist it every day. So, I mean, there's many, many more examples. And if you look at the agricultural workers as well, you can see the exploitation, the living care worker program. And, you know, now they want to bring in other programs like that are geared towards exploitation. So maybe I'll let other people from Toronto and Vancouver.
Mohan, if you might be able to provide us with some examples of the same arbitrary and racist policies that have been present in Toronto?
Yeah, I think, I mean, just to echo what Puya says, we all know how arbitrary the immigration system is. But I think it's also important to just to talk about that, you know, the reasons we're saying there should be status for all isn't just the humanitarian reason or human rights reason. It's the fact that Canada and, I mean, Canadian businesses, the government really actually benefit from having people live here without status. I mean, they're forced to work without any rights, without any recourse. If they're treated, you know, really poorly at work, they're forced to work for less than minimum wage. and really have no rights. And this is, I mean, really benefiting Canadian businesses and governments where they have this cheap, this pool of cheap labor who have no rights. And I mean, just to talk about some examples of the immigration system targeting people in Toronto, we've seen recently a wave of deportations of construction workers, which has been in the media quite a bit, but also just attacking and targeting people in public places, at subway stations, at the malls and parks. And it really just does serve to try to keep people scared to speak up for their rights. And I think that's one of the big purposes of this National Day of Action, of all these marches happening all over the country, is to say that people are refusing to be afraid. People are still going to stand up and oppose these attacks that are going on.
And Harjap in Vancouver, perhaps you might be able to provide our panel with some of the examples of some of these things that are been going on in Vancouver.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the examples are very similar. A lot of non-status people obviously working for much under minimum wage. And, you know, like, I mean, obviously we have situations of people in sanctuary still. There's a gentleman that's been here in sanctuary for almost close to two years now. And, you know, again, like, very arbitrary process. His mother was actually accepted on his persecution in Iran, yet he doesn't get accepted by the refugee process. So, yeah, just to echo what Poya was saying, I think the process is very arbitrary. But one of the things that's, you know, been highlighted and, you know, through working through our coalition that we're seeing is that also the guest worker program is so problematic. And I think it's really sort of critical that we take a look at this form of exploitation, because what it looks like is that, you know, we have these huge marches in the United States. We have, you know, obviously resistance all around the world, in Europe, obviously in Canada and everywhere else. And what the government's response right now is to talk about these guest worker programs. And I think what we have to realize is that the reality of all these people being here as non-status in North America, in Canada, is a reality of the world. You know, like we've talked to, you know, many people have talked about it over and over again in terms of wars and, you know, economic aggression by countries of the West. And what we're seeing now is that when there's the pressure from migrants all around the world, most of these countries actually want to make it official. They want to make the exploitation official. So they develop these guest worker programs, which are essentially a form of slavery. And I think that's one of the things that we've been looking at here in Vancouver, through particularly the Mexican, Filipino, and South Asian community, who are actually involved in some of these guest worker programs. Mm-hmm.
So again, we're talking about all of this in the context of a nationwide day of action happening tomorrow, Saturday, May the 27th. Actions happening in Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Ottawa, Fredericton. Maybe just a question for all of our panelists, just to reflect on the significance of doing this organizing on such a massive scale. I mean, we've seen similar things, maybe on an even larger scale, happening in the U.S. But why now? Why is this kind of cross-country mobilization important? Poya, maybe we'll start with you.
I mean, I think it's incredibly important, and I think that as cities, as people across Canada, across Turtle Island, come together and start to resist together, we'll only get stronger, and the movement will only grow as networks build, as people start to work together and start to learn about the specifics of each region and the issues that are local. We will start to have a better understanding of each other's struggles and in communities as well. I mean, there's various communities of immigrants, migrants living across Canada, and the more connection that we have between these communities, the stronger we will be in the end. And I think that just to do this is a huge step, and I think there'll be other national days of action, and hopefully they'll grow and will be larger and larger, and maybe one day you know, Turtle Island National or whatever day of action. So,
mm-hmm. Mohan,
yeah, I think, I mean, the National Day of Action, these marches are a huge step, and they're just obviously building off a lot of the momentum that's come from the states, but they're really a way to bring a lot of the communities together who have, you know, and I mean, these communities have continued to fight. They've been fighting for a long time on very similar issues, and it, now what we're really seeing is a lot of these communities coming together under a single banner and saying that we're all affected by these immigration policies. And I mean, just as an example, from Toronto, we have the Tamil community here who's recently come under attack under the guise of anti-terrorist measures. We have a lot of the Hispanic community groups that have been facing a lot of deportations in the past few months. And I mean, we have like, prison abolitionist groups, unions, schools, even all coming together under this banner of status for all and saying that no one is illegal and that we're not going to accept this treatment of anyone in our community. So I think it is really a huge milestone in this movement, and it's only going to grow from here.
And finally, Harjap, we'll end with your reflections.
I guess most of what's been said, like Mohan saying, I think one of the real strengths of something like this is to actually bring together the communities. You know, there have been, I guess, across Canada, ongoing struggles with a lot of different communities facing, deportation or, you know, just other forms of exploitation or oppression from the Canadian immigration policies. But to see not only, you know, these communities come together because of their shared experiences, but also, you know, something that I've been quite, you know, happy to see is that a lot of the communities drawing parallels to what's happened to them historically. It's very powerful to see here the South Asian community right now talking about the Kamagata Maru incident that happened in the early 1900s, and they're asking for a redress on it and actually connecting with what's happening with some of these campaigns and these movements across the country, and also the Chinese Canadian with their head tax campaign, and also the Japanese community with the Japanese internment, like all of these communities coming together to, you know, as you know the speakers are saying, not only to resist collectively and across Canada to show the public that this is a nationwide problem and there are communities resisting across the country, but also that, you know, these communities also won't forget what's happened, and they will use their histories to inform their struggle.
Thank you again very much to all of our guests. Again, we've been speaking with Poya from Solidarity Cross Borders in Montreal, Mohan from No One Is Illegal in Toronto, and Harjap from No One Is Illegal in Vancouver. We wish you all much luck with the demonstrations tomorrow, and we'll be right back joined with other guests, this time from across the border, just going south to the United States, taking a look at what's happening there. We'll be right back.
Solidarité sans frontières présente un statut pour tous et toutes. Marchons sur Montréal, personne n'est illégal.
A national day of action to demand status for all immigrants and refugees. No one is illegal.
Joignez-vous à nous pour mettre fin aux détentions et aux déportations et pour réclamer justice pour les centaines de milliers de sans-statut au Canada.
Saturday, May 27th. Join us at noon at Phillips Square, corner of St. Catherine and Union, as we march through Montreal and up to Côte-des-Neiges for a community picnic and assembly in Park Kent.
Pour plus d'informations, téléphonez au 859-9023.
This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Tuesday, 30th of May, 2006. Upgrade Montreal and MUTEC presents
Net Time North America.
Critical Practice Resuscitation.
At the Society for Arts and Technology. LSAT, 1195 Sénéchan. 10 a.m. to midnight.
Calling Tactical Media.
A free day-long gathering of panels,
performances, and interventions
of the technology arts, new media, digital culture, and net criticism.
Tuesday, 30th of May, 2006.
Featuring speakers and artists from around the world connected to nettime.org and critical media practices.
Calling Tactical Media.
As well as an evening of DJs and VJs. Live performance, live webcasts.
Calling Tactical Media.
Visit theupgrade.sat.qc.ca. That's theupgrade.sat.qc.ca.
A CKUT co-presentation.
Fed up with pesticide-soaked GMO-injected impossibly flawless vegetables? Want to know who grows your food, if they get paid, or if they even want to be growing your tomatoes and coffee? Want cheap, nutritious food all summer long? Le Frigovert will be open all summer, and again is proud to present its annual CSA Community-Supported Agriculture Project. Sign up now for fresh weekly organic vegetable baskets.
Pour la deuxième année, le Frigovert sera ouvert tout l'été. Veux-tu des légumes bio et des produits naturels et équitables? En plus, veux-tu supporter des fermiers locaux? Inscrivez-vous maintenant pour recevoir des paniers de légumes bio chaque semaine de l'été.
Beat back the city heat with crisp, cool, organic vegetables from a farm close to you. Pour plus d'informations, drop by Le Frigo Vert at 2130 Mackay Street or email us at lefrigovert@resist.ca. Nous sommes ouverts Monday to Friday, 11 to 7.
And we're back on CKUT 90.3 FM. Again, this is the Broadcast Against Borders, a week long of special programming here on CKUT, looking at issues of immigration in the lead up to the Cross Country Day of Action happening tomorrow, May the 27th, here in Montreal. There will be a march starting at noon at Phillips Square. And earlier in the hour, we were joined by three organizers from Known as Illegal and from Solidarity Across Borders, coast to coast, talking about these mobilizations in Canada. We're now going to go south of the border and take a bit of a look at the recent massive immigrant rights demonstrations that have been happening in the U.S. A lot of the stuff that's going on here in Canada, while it is different, is very much drawing inspiration from this movement and essentially is part of the same struggle. So joining us here in the studio, we have Dan, who's from New York City and works with the Anarchist People of Color Network. We also have with us on the phone, we have Jeanette Gabriel, who works with the New Jersey Civil Rights Defense Committee, and Oana, who works with the Organic Collective in San Diego. So a big welcome to all of our guests. Maybe we'll start with Dan, who's here in studio. First of all, welcome to Montreal.
Thank you. Hi.
And you you just came up for the demonstration?
Yeah, just for that. Talk to some of the organizers around here because we think you do great work.
And speaking of great work, what's been happening in New York recently has been quite phenomenal, especially to watch, you know, from wherever you are. It's been making, I think, worldwide headlines. You've been down in New York for some of these demonstrations. Maybe you could just describe to us the kind of atmosphere and the tone and what it's meant to be down there for these immigrant rights marches.
Yeah, it's really exciting, of course. I think one of the most interesting things about like the two big demos that happened, one on May Day, one a couple weeks before that, is it wasn't really organized by anyone on the traditional left who we would think is the traditional left. So it wasn't organized by anarchists, socialists, communists, UFPJ, or ANSWER. It was organized by immigrants who saw, you know, their needs were not being met by, you know, the situation they, excuse me, that they were in, and organized among themselves. And it's really forced a lot of people to really think about, like, well, what does solidarity mean? Who are we organizing for? And, you know, what, yeah, and how are we going to do work in the future? Seeing that they were kind of left behind with, you know, all of this energy was kind of like really not in like the traditional left, like I was saying.
Mm-hmm. And, but does that represent kind of a, I guess, a significant move forward? I mean, it's, I think what's been happening in the U.S. is kind of unprecedented in a lot of ways. Where do you see that kind of movement going?
Yeah, it's, of course it's going forward. The question that a lot of people are asking is, like, how well integrated will it be with, like, a lot of the other issues in like, saying, like, I live in New York City now, so, like, how do organizers integrate all of this energy into what they're doing? I came from, like, the global justice movement, which is, traditionally, solidarity for that meant, like, traveling somewhere and, like, you know, kind of taking part in somebody else's struggle and kind of forgetting what was going on at home. And a lot of people are, there's been a lot of, like, conversations about that and questioning that and asking of, like, well, what does this word solidarity mean? Does it mean, you know, going out, marching, having some big macho, like, street fighting demo? Or is it, you know, the way you look at something like childcare or, yeah, like the different neighborhoods around where you live and like who is being arrested by the cops and all that kind of stuff. And how is that integrated in the things that are going on in the world? And there's more and more groups made up of immigrants that are starting like on their own initiative to work with like a lot of these folks that have been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. We'll go now to Jeanette Gabriel, who is with us on the phone. And Jeanette works with the New Jersey Civil Rights Defense Committee. Welcome to the program, Jeanette. Are you there? Jeanette, we might have lost her. We'll see if we still have Oana with us on the phone from San Diego. Oana, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
And maybe you can just tell us a little bit about the Organic Collective and what you folks are doing down in San Diego.
Sure. I haven't been with the Organic Collective since its inception, but I can tell you in the last year, a little, well, I would say year and a half, we've spent a lot of time mostly dealing with the Minutemen. I don't know how familiar your listeners are with the Minutemen, but in April of last year, they came to San Diego to watch the border. They're like volunteers, pretty much. They kind of look like wannabe right-wing paramilitaries. if you ever run into them, they are armed and they go down and they resemble people who have hunted migrants at the southern border here for a long time, but they're a little bit more politically savvy. So we've been dealing with them for a while, countering them, going out to the desert to distract their activities, meeting them. They go out oftentimes to day labor sites here where immigrants are trying to get work and like harass them, so we try and counter them there. So that's been that was like pretty much the focus of our work. And then as things really built in the last like 3, 4, 5 months, and as there was really just this upswell here of activity going on from the immigrant communities, we've kind of just tried to figure out the best ways that we can offer support. It's been a little messy. I liked what Dan was saying about how more activist groups start to, you know, interact with immigrant rights groups that are coming up in movement that's coming from immigrants. I think that here it's pretty messy, to be honest. And we've actually found ourselves being interested in supporting the youth who we feel are not out there for their own political agenda, but are really just pushing for change. And so we've been looking to support them as much as possible. And And then we have some other stuff coming up. I don't know how much time I have to talk, but that's kind of the overview of what we've been doing the last year or so.
Well, I'd just like to say here in Canada, the Solidarity Across Borders websites has said that deportation agents who represent the Canadian government have been entering schools and workplaces, and there were incidents specifically in Toronto. And the reason for this is to create an atmosphere of fear for migrants and people without status. And I was wondering if you in San Diego or Dan, who's with us in studio here, would have any examples of U.S. Security forces trying to create the same atmosphere of fear that has been going on for a longer time in the United States. Unfortunately, we're now just learning about it now in Canada with the government that we have here now. But in the States, have there been more examples of how government agencies try to infiltrate groups?
Have government agencies tried to infiltrate here? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the end of what you said.
Exactly.
Have they? Well, I mean, I think that that's hard to say. I feel like at least, I mean, there are two ends of things. Like, one, there's the Minutemen side of things, where I feel like it, in a lot of ways, the Border Patrol agents and what we call ICE, which is Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement, it's very cut and dry. Like, they're very open with the Minutemen and very, like, consciously against us. And I think that that's been more, like, the traditional, like, very obvious, like, who's playing what roles. Something that we have seen, I don't know if this is exactly what you're asking, is we have, especially since the walkouts, since the students walked out here a few months back, we've seen a huge upswing in government agencies popping up on the streets of San Diego, like groups of like ICE agents on the streets asking people for papers.
To provoke and to hassle?
To provoke people, to hassle people. And, I mean, in San Diego, there's a huge undocumented community. And so they, and, I mean, that was an issue with, like, students trying to figure out, there were lots of students who didn't have papers who were trying to figure out how to engage in the walkouts. And I think that that is kind of tied to why they've shown up, is that they're aware of that, and now they're coming more into communities on the spot asking people for papers. They can detain, arrest, deport, you know, wrong place, wrong time, and that can be you, you know, on that corner stopped by that agent. And that's something that we have not, as of yet, figured, like, what I would say, like, a successful strategy to work against, other than to be ready to support folks, you know what I mean, as things come up.
Absolutely. And that seems to be what we're leading to here in Canada.
Now, I just wanted to touch on this issue, Dan, that you brought up, of immigrant rights being part of a broader of broader struggles for social justice. Now, both in Canada and in the States and in many other countries as well, some of the most frequently cited arguments for stricter immigration controls derive from the fears of those of lower-skilled workers who are responding in part from their own experiences to the systematic problems plaguing the bottom of the labor market, problems such as low wages, lax enforcement of labor laws, subcontracting in low-wage industries, and what they see as a ready supply of cheap immigrant labor. I'm wondering how the both of you, as organizers, as immigrant rights organizers, how much you see of a role or obligation towards both appreciating and addressing some of these fears.
Well, I mean, like, a lot of immigrants take jobs that no one in the U.S. would want. I mean, it's, like, really insane to think that, like, people are taking jobs that, like, Americans are, you know, away from Americans, because people are coming here to willingly take these jobs. And, like, my parents are from the Philippines. I wouldn't even be here if the economy wasn't collapsing. And a lot of that has to deal with, like, the colonial history of that country and other countries too. I mean, people of color in this country are largely here because they couldn't survive in their own countries, and it's because, to a large degree, of like the actions of Western nations. I mean, if there weren't any immigrants working in the U.S., the economy would collapse immediately. I mean, this is like the idea behind May Day, and if everybody walked in the job, it would have probably cost more money, you know, than any kind of economic catastrophe, you know, that could have happened. because our economy is just totally dependent on immigrant and immigrant laborers.
I guess I'm asking as well, just in terms of the degree to which there is popular support for the demands of politicians or the efforts of politicians to militarize the border and to crack down on immigrants, and a lot of that popular support comes out of areas and communities and individuals who are facing really difficult economic conditions. How much you see that those issues being an important important to address in your own immigrant rights organizing or incorporate into the demands for social justice and migrant rights? Ona, maybe you could answer this.
Yeah, I think that in terms of here in San Diego, and especially living in a place where the Minutemen have such a large presence for how small they are, they've really pushed a lot of the mythology around how immigrants interact with the labor force. So for us, we're pretty much starting at square one. Partially because there aren't a lot of us, but I mean literally putting out whatever media we can, whatever literature we can, to start even breaking down the misinformation that the vast, like that the general population believes about the realities of, you know, employment, unemployment, how immigrants interact with that. So I mean, I think that unfortunately we're fighting a huge media machine that's feeding, you know, this is this Minuteman, and he says this bunch of lies, and then we have to, you know what I mean, go fight that. One way that we've really addressed it is that we actually, the Organic Collective, something that I'm really proud that happened before I even joined, is they went to a lot of organizations in San Diego, people of color-led organizations, and said, hey, like, what are you looking for us to do? Organic is not an entirely white group, but we do have a lot of education privilege within the group. We do have a lot of economic privilege within the group. So we asked, and people said, we want you to organize in your community. We want you to talk to people that you can relate to that we don't have access to. And I think that that's how we've tried to do it, is say, okay, who do we have access to that needs to hear this, that isn't going to listen to an immigrant-based group? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think that that's what we're doing to kind of deal with that.
And speaking of that organizing within communities, and looking at it as it's happening within immigrant communities, and also with so many different activists, whether people have papers or they don't, or whether people are documented and undocumented, I think that certainly at this moment in history, we're seeing huge movements of immigrants, like immigrant-led movements, as Dan mentioned before, and their supporters popping up. Maybe we just have a few minutes left, but just maybe if each of you could offer your reflections in terms of, if we're looking specifically at even, H.R. 4437, this very repressive anti-immigrant legislation in the states. What would be the next step in this movement, or what do you guys who are organizing in the states see happening at this point, let's say, post May Day March, or looking ahead over the coming months and possibly years? Dan, do you want to?
Well, I think the most interesting conversations have been just about the solidarity, because they are happening with people that these lives affect. So it's not like a case of a bunch of activists parachuting into somebody's thing and kind of taking it over. There's like more of an equal balance of, the resources that some folks have and like the actual needs that a community would have. And hopefully the conversations will progress. And with that, our analysis will get a lot better. And so will the solutions to the problems that we're trying to solve.
And Ona, do you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. I think that's something that I've learned in the last few months as things have really taken off is I've watched certain activists or organizing groups hang back and look to support, and I've watched some groups try to capitalize on the situation and for their own purposes and kind of take over. you know, like different ideological led groups that are like, hey, this is an opportunity for us to go in and save the day. And I think that learning, watching that mistake happen by groups that couldn't bring themselves to say, hey, what can I do to support you, not what can I do to like tell you what to do, do you know what I'm saying? I think that that's something that we're really trying to make happen in San Diego, is have organizers learn how to be supportive, not just be leaders because we think that we're the best leaders. And I just wanted to add one quick thing, just as an update. I don't know if you've talked about this, but the United States Senate did pass a comprehensive immigration reform bill today. So if people are interested in what that really looks like, it's pretty scary. It will definitely pass the House, I'm sure. DeleteTheBorder.org has the main story up right now.
Great. Thank you very much, Ona, for joining us on the phone. Ona from the Organic Collective in San Diego. If you want more information on them, it's www.organiccollective.org. And to Dan from Anarchist People of Color in New York, thank you both again for being on the show. And that just about does it for Off the Hour. Again, this broadcast taking place in the context of a nationwide day of action happening tomorrow, May 27th. There'll be a march, Status for All, happening in Montreal, beginning at noon at Phillips Square. And for more information on that, you can visit www.solidarityacrossborders.org. You can email sansfrontieres@resist.ca or phone 514-859-9023. We'll be right back.
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
That does it for this edition of Off the Hour, produced by Montreal's Community News Collective, with assistance tonight from Tariq, Aaron, and Brett. Thank yous due to our guests and to all of those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. For more information on anything you heard tonight, or if you'd like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact CKUT's Community News Department at 514-398-6788. Or news@ckut.ca. Stay tuned. Cafe is coming up next.